Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, May 30th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Need an incubator? Think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're so glad that you could join us today. After a couple of days this week with no radio shows, we are on the road. We are on the road. Just one second. So sorry about that. So we've got a little an issue that I'm working with here. It looks like we've got today is the fifth Thursday actually of the month. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And so normally we don't have anybody scheduled on the fifth days of each month. For example, the fifth Tuesday, fifth Wednesday, fifth Thursday. But I noticed in the chat room and on the switchboard that we've got Dr. McCray that has called in, and she says she's got some great topics for us today, which is surprising me a little bit, but that is awesome. So we're glad to have her on. So right now I've got Jen on the other phone actually calling Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, to reschedule him for tomorrow. He was going to come on and talk a little bit about the northern fowl mite and lice. So Jen's just going to keep trying to call him. If not, and he calls in, that's not a big deal. No problem, Dr. McCray. Thought it was your day. That's not a problem. It is the fifth Thursday, so it is all good. And I'm going to see if maybe Peter can come on tomorrow for a we're going to be on the road tomorrow, so we won't be doing anything tomorrow. But since you've called in, Dr. McCray, that's no problem. We've got you. We can reschedule Peter Brown. That is not a problem. I see that Dr. McCray has joined us in the chat room. So Dr. McCray, poultry scientist, professor, small flock specialist, and let me see what we've got going on next week. Okay, I just got to give me a second. We're juggling some things here. Let's see, next week, the first, that's a Thursday. That's okay. That's no problem, Dr. McRae, because next Thursday I'll also be on the road. My life story, actually, for Jen's work, and I will be juggling both a 11-week-old and a 2-year-old by myself, and there was no way I can do that and do the radio show as well. Family comes first. So next Thursday will not be a problem, and so we can have you on today instead of next Thursday. So that is, thanks for the instant message. That is not a problem. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. The only live radio show broadcast all about keeping backyard poultry and show poultry and living a self-sustaining lifestyle. This is our fifth year of broadcasting. We broadcast over 810 episodes, maybe 820, and they are all archived for your listening pleasure. They're at blogtalkradio.com, zoom.com, podcast.com, and itunes.com. So if there's a show you missed maybe 3 years ago that you heard about and you want to go and listen to it, you can do that. No problem whatsoever. I've got some more information about the big Tractor Supply Power to the Poultry Tour that I'll be doing here the last week in June. So let me give you some information about that. This will strictly be by memory, so don't write it down yet. But we've got the locations, I believe, set. I sent my itinerary to them yesterday, and so the locations as far as the towns have been set and approved. And now we're looking at the itinerary as far as the days that we're going to have the big event. So, of course, it includes a book signing, a Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop, Q&A segment, the whole nine yards. We have a blast. We always have great turnout, and it is fun, fun, fun. So let me look at my calendar here, and I'll kind of give you those dates for the last week in June when we do the second quarter Tractor Supply Power to the Poultry Tour here with Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So it looks like here it'll be a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 5 events in 5 days. Yes, we'll be worn out, but that's what it's all about, spreading the chicken love. So we've got here Wednesday, June 26th. Okay, weekday events are in the evening, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. So we're looking at Wednesday, June 26th. We've got Anderson, South Carolina. Anderson, South Carolina for a big event there, Wednesday, June 26th. Thursday, June 27th, again, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., we will be at Easley, South Carolina. Easley, South Carolina on Thursday, June 22nd, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Looks like Friday we're going to be in Weaverville, North Carolina, just north of Asheville. Weaverville, North Carolina, that's a Friday evening event, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then Saturday, big Saturday and Sunday events are always huge. Saturday are going to be, will be in Asheville, beautiful, beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. I'm so looking forward to that. And so Saturday, the 29th, it looks like, of June, Asheville, North Carolina. And then Sunday, we'll make the trek over to Newton, North Carolina. And, all these events will be at that local Tractor Supply in those cities. And I will post the exact information and the addresses of the stores and the whole nine yards there. But the Saturday, the 29th there in Asheville, will be a 10 a.m. to noon. 10 to noon. You can wake up, get some things done around the garden, around the house. Come on out to the local Tractor Supply there in Asheville, North Carolina. And from 10 to 2, have a great time. Again, book signing, getting started with Backyard Poultry Workshop. And you'll be out by noon, 12:30. Head and have some lunch, and then enjoy the rest of your Saturday. So Sunday in Newton, North Carolina, that would be the 30th. It looks like it's going to be a 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. event. Again, with the book signing, and I'm normally available and ready and willing to talk poultry, talk chicken, spread the chicken love an hour before the event. So the evening events officially go from the weekday evenings, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., but we'll be doing we'll be there at 5 p.m. to do book signings and Q&A and meet some great folks, and then 6 to 8 is actually the Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop. So that is going to be the second quarter Tractor Supply Chicken Whisperer Tour coming up. We're so looking forward to that as we travel around the country and spread the chicken love. We're also looking at the next tour, which will probably be in September. Okay, and it's going to be, I think, right now a choice. We may eventually try to get out towards the west. Towards Texas. We may wait until do that until November or early December, but we may be heading up towards Ohio, Kentucky, maybe Michigan in September before it gets too cold and the ice and the snow moves through the Midwest up that way. So we're not sure yet. That's still very preliminary, but we'll have two more Tractor Supply Chicken Whisperer Power to the Poultry Tours after this one in June. So we hope to get, we've already seen, this will be, we've done Florida, Alabama, this will be North Carolina and South Carolina. We'd like to get out towards Alabama, Mississippi, maybe Louisiana, definitely Texas. Got a lot of fans out in Texas. And then we'd also like to get up in towards the Midwest, Michigan, maybe Kentucky, St. Louis, Missouri, maybe Arkansas. But we're definitely looking forward to, again, continuing to travel around this great land, spreading the chicken love. And absolutely got to love that. So that's what we're looking forward to doing. So just wanted to give you an update on that and let you know that that is coming up. And I hope to see you at one of the events. They're going to be absolutely fun, fabulous, and educational when we actually do that. So appreciate you tuning in today. Again, want to send a shout out to all the homeschoolers. I know it's summertime, but many homeschoolers school through the summer. Because, you know, as Jen being a teacher, you know, they forget so much over the summertime but when they go back to school. So thank you, homeschoolers, for tuning in on a regular basis and incorporating this show into your regular curriculum there at homeschool. We want to thank all the over-the-road truck drivers for listening to the show and listening to the archives 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and so we hope to continue to do that. So, and then, of course, we want to say thank you to all the feed and seed stores nationwide that stream this show live every day. Hope your store is full of customers right now, and we hope that business is well and will continue to be well there in your feed and seed store. Thank you for tuning in. And, of course, all of our live listeners that are able to get in the chat room, and some of you who can't based on your IT department at work and whatnot, but we thank you for listening live if you are actually listening live. So just give me just a second to see if we can contact Jen's on the other line. Just a second. Okay, sorry about that. We were trying to get in touch with Peter Brown that was going to come on today, but we've got Dr. McRae. And let's go on ahead and go over here to the phone lines. And let's see. Zazmira says, "Hey, CW, how do you deal? How do I deal with hateful neighbors? My neighbors are trying to put in an HOA to push us and our birds out." Okay. So let me get this straight, because I've helped a lot of folks across the country. We've been very successful getting the laws changed, and I've even mediated between homeowners and cities, as up in Vermont with the young lady up there. Oh, what was her name? That was a couple of years ago. But so first, my question for you there in the chat room while we're talking about this, there is not an HOA currently where you live, and chickens are illegal. That's my first question. Right now, you are completely within the law there where you're at. And so that's my first question. There's a 20-second delay between live and what you hear. So and she says she's in Wake County, but that doesn't chickens are okay. Okay, so here's the issue. If they go ahead and try to put in and create an HOA, again, I'm not an attorney, I'm not a lawyer, don't try to be one, don't pretend to be one. Just help folks with my experience over the last, oh my gosh, decade of being pretty successful with this. If they do that, then you need to check and make sure that you should be grandfathered in. So, for example, I specifically heard a judge in a very affluent city in Georgia when we were going through a battle there, and he specifically asked the prosecutor, and this was a judge that was appointed by the city, so you think they want to scratch each other's back, and but this is a judge been there for years in this city, and he told the city prosecutor, okay, he said based on this particular case where someone had chickens before they created an ordinance to limit chickens, he asked the prosecutor, he said, "So let me get this straight, if I have a White House and the council here in Roswell all of a sudden outlaws White Houses, you can't have a White House, then basically what you're saying is I would have to paint my house because y'all all of a sudden made a rule saying there are no White Houses allowed." And he was like, I'm sure that caught the prosecutor off guard because they're supposed to be, again, representing the same city. And he said, "Yeah, basically." And so the judge says, "Well, that's ridiculous. Grandfathered in. You can't now say he can't do something, blah, 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 blah." And then he went on with this great story about how this area used to be very rural, and there used to be, I guess it was a wood mill, and it became very unsightly, and it ended up, and these new subdivision folks didn't like it because it was very unsightly, even though it had been there for 200 years or something like that. And so it burned, and everybody was like, "Yay," and then they went to build it back, and they were like, "No, we can't build this back, blah, blah, blah." And so they were like, "No, we can. They've been there for 200 years, and, it's regardless. They were here before you." So it was pretty neat judge there regarding that. So be advised, and you may want to get legal counsel to see about grandfathering. You would be grandfathered in. "Oh, we're a homeowner association now, so you can't do this, that, or the other." And believe it or not, some HOAs, and I'll tell you this when we get on with the radio show about our topic today, it's interesting that, okay, where was I going with this? HOAs. That I've found in the past when we have beat and won with some homeowners associations. Now, some are rock solid, but here's what I found with homeowners associations over the last years. Sometimes the covenants within a homeowners association, plan of action, would actually be to check and see if they are legit. I ran into a case personally with my issue where I lived, in the subdivision that I lived, that they claimed to be one, but they were not one. It was not legit. They didn't maintain their incorporation. They didn't have mandatory dues. When you closed on your house, when you bought it, there was nothing in the deed or anything else that talked about HOA or anything like that. So some pretend to be one, and they're really not. And then some truly are. But in our case, I've personally experienced ones that pretended to be one, but they really weren't. So they had no legal foundation whatsoever. So, but we've also found with a lot of covenants, specifically with older homeowners associations, the covenants were written by the developer with no legal background whatsoever. So, and and before the big urban backyard chicken movement became what it is today, hugely popular. So so the issue there was that the covenants were written by this developer, no legal. So we've seen them where they've said household pets only. And that was it. And they tried to say, you can't have chickens because it says household pets only. Well, as we know today, chickens can and will be household pets. Some will go and will say these domestic animals only, thinking dogs and cats, domestic animals, you know, maybe a parrot, whatever. Well, chickens were domesticated 6,000 years ago. They are domesticated. So chickens would fall under that domesticated pets only. Pets only, household pets only. Well, chickens, as we know, can be pets. MyPetChicken.com, you know. So we know. If you look up pet in the New American Standard Dictionary, it basically says any animal for companionship and pleasure. So you could have a pet elephant if you wanted to, if the I guess the covenants say, hey, household pets only or pets only or what have you. Elephant could be a pet based on the New American Standard Dictionary that says pet. Any animal, any, not just dog, cat, any animal used for companionship and pleasure. So that was for internet. I think that's what's so. Anyway, so very, very, very interesting there. So more than likely, based on what I've seen over a decade of this, you'd probably be grandfathered in. You would have to get legal counsel to make sure that would be the correct issue and what would happen. But it'll be very interesting. So, but yeah, homeowners can and they have been firsthand. Beat, if you want to call it that, with chickens based on poorly written covenants. Now, we've seen some humdingers covenants that were really, really written crazy. I mean, you could tell an attorney, probably a real estate attorney, wrote the covenants where it basically says, no chickens, no birds, no fowl, no livestock, no farm animals, no, you know, I mean, it goes down the list. No matter how you slice it, you can't have chickens. And so at that point, you have to go down that route of trying to, again, get that changed in that HOA. And because so many people are ignorant when it comes to what, you know, really backyard poultry keeping is all about, and a lot of times it doesn't fly because they just have no clue what we're talking about. You know, even though your coop may look a lot better than those horrid, faded plastic forts and toys all in the backyard of their 9 kids, but and be very pleasant and whatnot, it still has that stereotype, unfortunately. So, but we're making progress, which is great, and it's one of those things that we'll continue to do. So give me one more second. I'm going to put you on mute dead air for about a minute or two and see if we've got any updates from Peter. If not, we're going to bring Dr. McCray on live. So give me just a second. All right, let's go over here to the phone lines. We've got poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McCray, Ph.D., on hold here in the switchboard. So we're going to go ahead and the computer cooperates here. Yeah.
Hi.
She is live. Dr. McCray, thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm so sorry I got the days mixed up.
No need to apologize. You know, as long as we've done this show, we can roll with the punches. That's why we have backups with broadcasting. If I can't get on via this, via that, via this, via that, you know, we got like 4 ways we can get this show live on the air. So when we're on the road, and we are on the road today, actually, but we've got to continue to spread the chicken love. So no need to apologize. We are glad you're here. And
I'm not going to be able to call in next week because I'm at a conference. So
okay.
I don't know
that
how
out
I
perfect.
Got it so confused.
Nope, that'll
it
work out perfectly.
Happened.
No problem, because I don't think next Thursday there will be a show with me juggling an 11-week-old and a 2-year-old while Jen is taking some end of the year. She's got, what do you call it, post-planning. She's off maternity leave now, and she's going back, and she's got the end of the year, why she hadn't been there, and I forget, 12 weeks or something, but she's got to go, we got to go up to Atlanta for 2 days for some post-planning meetings, and I think that wraps it up for her for the summer. So that'll be good, so there shouldn't be any more travel with her job, at least through the summer. Continue to broadcast, so no worries at all, no whatsoever, and I don't even know what topic you're going to be discussing today.
Well, the topic that I would have covered next week, which is translating research topics, so I've got four articles I was going to go over and on various topics and see if we can't inspire someone to maybe do their own research. And since you have young people who listen to your show, maybe one of these ideas will inspire them to do a science fair project using their chickens. So I have, I'm going to get started with nest utilization in laying hens as it relates to where the nest is located inside the pen and whether or not there's drinkers, nipple drinkers, in front of the nest box. So this is a study out of Europe, and, you know, things have changed in Europe, so their commercial production practices are rather unlike ours. They have what are called aviaries now.
Okay.
And so this is the title of this study is Nest Use is Influenced by the Positions of Nests and Drinkers in Aviaries. So these are pens that were built to be set up just like commercial aviaries. There's an indoor area and an outdoor area.
Okay.
So they had two types of nests. One was placed, one set was placed near the wall. And those were called wall-placed nests. And one set of nests was placed in the center. And those usually had one or two tiers. So I'll call those tiered nests, nest boxes. With the tiered nest boxes, some, since they were in the middle, some faced the outdoor area and some faced the service corridor where people walk along.
Mm-hmm.
And there were four nests for each pen. So the other factor that they considered was nipple drinker placement.
Okay.
So you've got half your pens have wall-placed nests and half your pens have tiered nests. Half of each of those had nipple drinkers placed right in front of the nest boxes, and then half had them placed against the wall. And, you know, why were they placing nipple drinkers right in front of the nest boxes? Well, they're not exactly sure how to design these aviaries for maximum utilization for the birds. So some have started putting nipple drinkers right in front of the nest boxes to encourage birds to use the nest boxes. Otherwise, where are they going to lay the eggs, Andy?
Hang on.
Uh-oh.
Hang on just a second. Go ahead. I was trying to get in touch with Peter Brown just to try to make sure if I can get in touch with him and let him know so I wasn't. I would say that if they're not laying in the nest boxes, they're going to be laying on the ground and on the floor and all over in the
coop
or
outside. On the floor.
Outside.
Yeah, and floor eggs, you know, depending on, you know, what you got, can't be sold. And so you want, you know, those are called mislaid eggs. You can't do much with them. So what they did is they set up a bunch of these pens. So they had replications. And we've talked about this in the past. Anything can happen once. But if it happens in multiple pens, you know, then it's not a fluke. They used Lohmann Leghorns for this study. And what they did, they also videotaped the behavior of the birds at 25 weeks, 36 weeks, and 43 weeks. So what they were doing is they were videotaping the area right in front of the nests to examine the behavior. You know, how are the nests used by the hens? We know that chickens have preferences, and about 3 hours before they lay their egg, they start to look for a nest, and they examine their options. So they're going to go nest to nest. They're going to walk in that platform right in front of the nesting boxes and kind of check out the nests, poke their head in, maybe step in, you know, see if that's the one they want.
Anybody that has a multitude of nest boxes, for example, I've got, say 10 nest boxes, and I've got 12 chickens, and they don't need that many, and they'll use, all 12 will use three out of the 12 that you've got, and they'll actually sit there and pace if one of those three that their favorite is. Yeah, so I mean, anybody who has chickens and a multitude of the nest boxes sees that maybe on a regular basis where they do have their favorite.
Right. And, you know, what influences these favorite favoritisms by the chickens? Well, we know that there's preferences for nest boxes that are up high. So that's why we recommend that nest boxes be mounted up, you know, about a foot up off the wall, off the ground. They do prefer corner nests. They also have a preference for the quality of the nesting material in there. They do prefer loose material rather than like, say, plasticky stuff or just nothing at all.
Okay, versus, for say, like if someone's got shavings in there versus a coarse artificial turf.
Yeah, yeah.
Artificial
they
turf
prefer the loose material.
Nesting pad.
Yeah. They also have a preference in the color of the nest. So there's a question. Those two topics right there would be really cool for students to check out. They could put half of their nests could have shavings in it, and the other half could have AstroTurf mats in there. And, you know, maybe for 2 weeks they keep it one way, and for another 2 weeks they switch it up and see if the birds follow the nesting material in their preferential laying of eggs, or if they just like to stick to the one box. So there's a good science experiment for some of your homeschoolers. Another thing is if you have wooden nest boxes and you have an interest in painting them, what you might do is paint the inside of the nest box and see if the birds prefer colored nest boxes. And I'll tell you, the research says they do.
Like colored nesting boxes.
Yes, yes.
The inside.
Red,
okay.
Yellow, blue,
we had a question
and
in
green.
The chat room, and this has become in the last 6 months to a year. Someone must have seen a study somewhere at some college that said that nesting box curtains are the new rave now, and people are going out to the cloth store and the home, you know, the hobby store, and buying cute little pattern type of cloth and making curtains.
As long as it's easy to take down and wash periodically, mm-hmm. Yeah, they do like darker nest boxes, and sometimes that can just be achieved by painting the inside. Although curtains are cute. I'm going to leave it there. How about that?
I'm going to leave it there because I can go, for the record, regardless of how much I love my chickens, I will not ever put curtains in my coop.
Now you can paint the inside. But
maybe
that would be a
that.
Good project,
you know,
for a homeschooler. You know, take two colors, like maybe a bright yellow and maybe a dark green. And then, you know, let it go for 2 weeks and then maybe repaint the inside and see if the color changes the preference at all. And where the chickens lay their eggs. Do they follow the color to the new nest box or do they stay put? They don't care about the color. That would be an interesting study for someone to do at school. Light intensity also, light levels in the pen affects the preference for nest boxes. And seclusion, you know, putting up drapery, affects utilization of the nest box. So those are things that we know affect preferences, but this study, you know, they videotape these birds because they know that the birds interact as they search for a nest box. It's important that they interact because sometimes those interactions are negative. They all fuss about getting into one particular nest box. And those arguments or antagonistic encounters occur over preferred nest boxes. So you don't want those antagonistic interactions because antagonism causes stress, right, Andy?
Exactly.
And stressed birds don't do well. So you want them to use as many of your nest boxes so that there aren't any arguments.
They'll turn off that laying machine very quick if they get stressed.
Yeah, if they stress out, that's one of the first things they're going to give up is egg laying. So, you know, they were thinking, you know, well, will the drinkers in front of the nest boxes affect arguments? Will it cause crowding? Will this lead to more floor eggs or mislaid eggs? So the kind of data that they collected, they looked at the number of eggs per pen that were laid in the nest versus the number that were laid on the floor, and they recorded that every day, daily recordings. So their results found that more hens stood in front of the nest boxes that faced the service corridor than the nest boxes that faced the outdoor area when we're talking about the tiered nest boxes. That's kind of interesting. You would think that maybe they'd want to look outside, but apparently not. Maybe they don't want to look outside. They just want to concentrate on getting that egg out of them. Most hens stood in front of the nest boxes that faced the service corridor that had the majority of the hens. Okay, let's get this out right. The hens that were in pens with nest boxes that faced the service corridor that had nipple drinkers, that had the most number of hens that stood in front of the nest boxes. The pens that had the least number of hens that stood in front of the nest boxes were in the pens that faced outdoors and didn't have drinkers in front of the nest boxes. So those were the kind of pens that, you know, had the least amount of arguments, crowding.
Now, were those, I'm picturing this, were the drinkers accessible from the nesting box? So you're saying the hen could hop up in there, she can read, you know, 50 Shades
of
Grey.
She's
got her nesting curtains there, you know.
There's
maybe
no curtain.
Maybe, you know, her brush and comb and lipstick and whatnot. And she can just reach out the nesting box with her beak and sip a little water as she sits there in her nice little
nesting
box.
Would have to stand up to reach them.
Okay.
But it's along the walking platform that's in front of the nest box.
Right, right. Okay.
The bird aged, they tended to crowd less often because, remember, this was over the course of many weeks.
Mm-hmm.
More floor eggs were laid in pens with wall-placed nests versus tiered nests. So having those nests in the middle of the pen resulted in more eggs that were laid in the nest boxes versus on the floor. Nipple drinkers, where they were placed, had no influence on the number of floor eggs. And they also recognized that they had very few floor eggs, fewer than the commercial average. So, you know, you should at least be aware of that.
They're not really concerned about drinking when they're laying. They're focused on looking for that nest and concentrating on laying that egg. And I'll get
but
some
the
water.
The farmer's
later.
Concerned about floor eggs because he can't sell those. Do you follow?
You can't. So they couldn't just go in and pick them up and sell them?
No.
How would anybody know?
Thanks, Andy. Moving on. Okay. So pens with the tiered nests and pens with drinkers in front of the nests had a lot more birds that were stationary in their behavior sets. And they had a laundry list of behaviors that they were looking for in these birds, and it was pretty impressive. I actually learned a great deal about how they set up their behaviors. They had things from avoid, balance, body movement, drink, exit, fight, peck, push, preen, visit, nest, inspect, nest, leave platform, walk, threaten. So they had even more than that. So they had a laundry list of behaviors they were going through on the video analyses, and it was very thorough. So they, you know, if on that laundry list, some of those were stationary behaviors where they weren't moving very much. And when you look at the tiered nests and the pens with drinkers in front of the nest, they had more stationary behaviors, so that can lead to crowding. There was more pushing
And I think after I just saw it in the chat room, but I don't want to ignore it. It was defined wall placement versus tiered, and I'm guessing that is when you mount the nesting boxes against an outside wall of the coop versus
right.
have a freestanding nest box system
in the middle of the pen.
Of the coop. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
And the tiered nest boxes had, like, level one and level two,
mm-hmm.
one above the other, first story and second story.
Okay.
So more pushing and more arguments were had in pens with wall-placed nest boxes near the service corridor. So the wall-placed place nest boxes that were near the service corridor, more birds were crowding together. More eggs were laid in wall-placed nests along the wall near the service corridor, however, rather than near the outdoor area. And more eggs were laid in nests facing the service corridor, but not such a big difference. More eggs were laid in the tiered nests facing the service corridor, but it wasn't significantly different as it was in the wall-placed nest boxes. Overall, the tiered nest boxes lead to more even use of the different nest boxes all the way around, and nipple drinker placement in front of the nest boxes did not affect how the nest box was used. So there's something to consider if you are interested in that. And there's some ideas. Maybe I've got the thinking juices going in some young people about science projects they'd like to do someday. Test that out in their own birds.
What we did mention, and we've talked about this on the show before, and you and I off the air talked about it before, that you know, I'm listening to this thinking, wow, this sounds like a very extensive study. Most are. But to think, okay, now we know that all the chickens had to get the same feed for this to be accurate.
Oh, of course.
All of them had to get the same. Everything, because, you know, especially when we're talking about number of eggs, they're like, well, this one had this feed, or that one had that feed, or this one had more feed. So they have to eliminate all those possibilities of
right.
having more or less eggs. So everything
standardized
across the board for all of this system. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work.
Well, you know, all the pens are the exact same dimensions, the light placements, you know, the feed, where the feeder is, access to feed, feed time, light intensity, all those things have been controlled for so that you're actually just testing where the nest boxes are located and where the nipple drinkers are located and how that affects use of the nest box. And that's going to help manufacturers as they try to build or adjust the interior of some of these facilities and what kind of system they should put in. Should they put the nest boxes against the wall? Should they put them in the middle? Sounds like they should probably be tiered and be in the middle.
Yeah, especially if they are if they're in it for the almighty dollar. Then just like Peter says a lot, you know, sick chickens don't pay the bills. Dead chickens don't pay the bills, regardless
if
you like the surroundings or the treatment of the animals or not. You know, they don't want any sick animals more than you do because it doesn't pay their employees. It doesn't, you know.
No.
So, I can see how they would want to see this. Now, did they talk about, and I might have missed this earlier when I was still trying to get in touch with Peter, did they talk about or use different material, like plastic next box versus wooden?
No, that wasn't the goal of this study. They mimicked what is commercially available. And so they got it all from, you know, commercial suppliers. That could be something that they do later on, but we all know it's much easier to clean metal than wood. Clean and disinfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a lot less hiding places, too, with the preformed plastic
mm-hmm.
ones where mites and lice can hide and things like that.
And in a commercial system, once you've got that problem, it spreads to everybody by the hundreds. Okay, so I've got another study here. Are you ready to move on?
I'm ready,
to do with geese.
Geese, okay.
I found this really kind of interesting because, well, I find all poultry interesting. So it's titled The Influence of Loose Mix Feeding on Behavior, Feed Intake, and Body Weight of Growing Geese. And this is another study that was done in Europe.
Okay.
So they looked at body weight gain and feed intake. They compared two diets, and they did it in male geese. Now, I read and reread, and it doesn't say what breed of goose, so I was kind of bummed that I didn't get that information from it. Of course, I could contact the authors, but I'm a little worried they give me the response in French because this is a French study and I don't speak French. So they had six pens of 21 birds, and each pen was 62 feet square. And they had one drinker, two feeders, and they also had outdoor access. Of course, that outdoor access wasn't described, so I can't tell you anything about that. What they did is they started all the birds from day one to day 41 on a regular, complete, balanced diet that was 18% crude protein, and the birds could eat as much as they want. It's called ad libitum. So at their liberty, they could eat whenever and however much they wanted. So, but on day 42, they split them up into the six pens with two different diets. So day 42 to day 98, they did the experiment, okay? So the control diet was a complete pelleted diet that contained 500 grams of sorghum per kilogram, and that was 16% crude protein. Then they had the test mix, and that was 500 grams of protein-rich pellets with 500 grams of sorghum whole seeds, of course, per kilogram. And they calculated the crude protein for the protein-rich pellets to be 23%, and the whole sorghum seeds was 9% crude protein. And their sorghum came from a tannin-free source. Birds were fed a feeding schedule that varied depending on what growing period they were on, what stage of growth they were on. So they went through a four-hour-per-day feeding schedule that was 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening. Then they had a two-hour-per-day, then a one-hour-per-day, and then a three-hour-per-day growing period. So it varied, and birds were weighed every week. Feed consumption was measured every week. Behavior was done, I didn't remember to write down how often behavior was monitored, but they used a scan sampling, so they put like sheets or tarps up so they could scan sample as the birds were going through different parts of the day. They did scan sampling, you know, how many geese were lying down, how many were feeding, how many were drinking, how many were standing still, how many went outside, and you can't tell what they're doing. So here's some of the results. Intake or feed intake or feed consumption was higher in the test mix group for several of the time periods. Mortality was not significantly different for the two groups throughout the entire trial. Body weight was similar for the two groups all the way up until the last day of the trial. Then they saw a difference. What they found is on day 98, the control group was 3.5% lighter in body weight. Not a lot. Not a lot lower, but, you know, significant enough to notice. The average daily gain over the whole trial was higher by 9% in the test mix group. And feed conversion ratio didn't differ between the two groups over the entire trial. When you look at the behavior, the diet formulation that was fed didn't affect feeding behavior at all. And more birds performed feeding behavior when the feeding periods were shortened. So when food arrived, they knew, okay, it's feeding time, and they were going to go eat rather than dilly-dally. So what they figured out, overall, diet formulation did affect body weight at the end of the grow-out period, but it didn't affect behavior. So there you go. Wow.
So what most folks have been saying all these years, that if you go out once a day at 5 p.m. with a couple of scoops of feed and just pour it there, and all of them run over like crazy and start eating so fast, we've all seen this, blah, 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 and start eating and eating and eating and eating because, hey, it's feeding time. This is all I'm going to get for the next 24 hours. I got to eat it all because, whew, this is it.
Yeah.
Versus having a constant supply that most folks recommend, and a feeder never running out so they can get it free choice.
Now, mind you, this is geese, and you're talking chicken.
Right.
Okay.
So, interesting, kind of plays the same.
And that, you know, there's been studies with broiler chickens on meal feeding versus ad libitum feeding and mm-hmm. how it affects the birds and the meat and fat deposition. And, of course, in geese, one of the marketable products is that fatty liver, so meal eating is preferred because it's not only the meat and the feathers that are saleable, it's also the liver. And in chickens, you know, that's usually just a giblet, if you get a giblet at all. So whether or not it's fatty, you know, it's actually not the same bird that you're getting.
Right.
It's not that bird's liver. So there you go. It's a whole different system. And I just thought that was interesting because I know some of your listeners out there have more than one species. Or,
oh, yes, many of them,
you know,
do.
I wanted to include something that was just a little bit different. And I've got two more studies,
okay,
plus two short little ones. If I do one of the short little ones, I think that will allow you to go to commercial on time. Will that be okay?
Yep, we're ready.
Okay, so I'll do one of the short little ones.
Okay.
So this one was the effects of outdoor access on growth performance, carcass composition, and meat characteristics of broiler chickens. This was done in China. And basically they wanted to see if outdoor access, you know, affected growth performance and the quality of the meat for broiler chickens. And they did this on female broiler chickens only, just like the last study was male geese only. Excuse me. And they had three groups with six replicates. And the three groups were birds reared indoors, so that's your control, birds reared with outdoor access since 36 days of age,
okay,
and birds reared with outdoor access since 71 days of age, so a little bit later. And they found that the outdoor access...
These, you said these were broilers?
Mm-hmm.
But so at 71 days, I mean, here in America, Tyson's processing them at, what, 38 days? Something crazy.
Probably a different strain.
Okay, I'm just trying. I'm listening here, going broiler chickens, female broiler chickens raised for meat, and when I heard the day, you know, they were given access outside at 71 days, I was like, whoa, really, broiler chickens?
And we're familiar with some of the more American or European named chickens. This was a Wens yellow feathered chicken provided by Southern Poultry Breeding Company of Wens of Guangdong, China. So it's a different strain than some of the ones that you may be used to.
Okay.
So they showed that the outdoor access had no effect on growth performance, carcass yield, meat yield, muscle protein content, muscle fiber characteristic, or water holding capacity. You know how meat can sometimes drip and drip and drip after it's been processed? That's called drip loss. And there are things that you can do in management that affects drip loss. So the customer doesn't want something that's, you know, you weighed it and then drip loss is all at the bottom of the packaging, and that's weight they paid for, that, you know, the chicken's a little drier. Chickens in the outdoor access group had a better appearance and degree of evenness in their meat. Birds in the outdoor access had a significantly lower lung percentage than birds in the control group. But the kidney percentage in the 35-day-old group was significantly lower than the control group.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to kind of ferret out later on in future studies.
Now,
quick
question. I'm still processing all this. If the study has quote-unquote, access to outdoors, just like, I guess, here in America, they can label it free range if they have a little door at the end of this 300-foot chicken house and the chickens choose to access.
So this
outdoor
ground was similar to the natural environment with a soil and sand floor but no vegetation. To eliminate the influence of pasture intake. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but they... It's
just measuring access to the out of doors, not what they're consuming out of doors.
Right,
that
but
would
they,
influence were, growth performance.
I guess I'm confused. So they're raised inside, but they have access to go outside if they choose to? Or they were raised out. Okay, gotcha. So we're still, some of these birds that the tested may not have ever stepped foot outside.
Theoretically.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. I just, because I know we've talked that before, what does free range really mean? So I just wanted our listeners to
There's nothing out there for them to eat. It's just soil and sand or sandy soil.
Right. Gotcha.
Okay, the meat of the chickens in the 35-day-old group that had outdoor access had higher lightness values in the meat than the control group. Outdoor access significantly increased the shear force of the breast muscles, so that, you know, ties into tenderness. And it had decreased fat content in thigh muscle. That was the 35-day-old group. Birds in the 35-day-old group had lower fat content in the thigh muscles over the 70-day-old group. So the longer they have access to the outdoors, less fat in the thigh muscle. In the thigh muscles of the birds in the 35-day-old group, they had lower levels of monounsaturated fatty acids and higher levels of polyunsaturated fatty acids over the control group and the 70-day-old group. So, overall, they found that outdoor access had no effect on growth performance and yield traits, but did seem to improve the meat quality. And birds reared with outdoor access, day 36 onward, had better appearance and meat quality than those with outdoor access from 71 days of age onward. So how the meat appears seemed to change, but growth performance didn't. Kind of an interesting study, but that's just the short version. I didn't give you the really long version because there's a couple other studies that I did the long versions on.
To me, it sounds like if someone didn't read it word for word and really researched the study, it sounds like somebody would want to use that and say, hey, look, free-range chickens are better for you, or they're, you know, when I look at it, I'm thinking it's moot because 90% of those chickens may never have set outside.
They could have done a behavioral part of this study, but that's not what they published in this article. But, you know, you never know.
Never know. Okay, cool.
So that's, you know, it. Hopefully I'm helping some of your listeners just be a little bit more critical in how they evaluate claims and how they label things so that you can be more concise in your understanding of what's really being stated. And for your young listeners out there, maybe it'll inspire them to do a school science project using their chickens.
I think more needs to be done, obviously. You and I have talked until we're blue in the face, and I've mentioned for the last 5 years we've been doing the show that I wish somebody would do one comparative between raising from hatch to egg production, standard feed versus organic feed, and then test the eggs and let us know if there's a hill of beans difference. Not that it would change anybody's mind who do the organic lifestyle. We try to do that most as best we can.
Well, didn't I read you one of those articles?
What's that?
No. Didn't I read you one of those articles? I can't remember. It was so long ago.
I don't know if we did one. No, I think we did one. We do one with turkeys and feed.
No, I thought I did one that was organic egg production.
If
I don't remember. You know, my memory is just only so-so.
That study. I know we had talked about it, you coming through and getting me set up doing that, and the dates didn't work out, things like that. But not that, I mean, just so someone would know, hey, is $40 a bag for organic feed worth it versus $50?
If you have listeners who are willing to dedicate the space and dedicate the rigor for it, they can apply for a farmer grant. But, you know, like I said, anything can happen once. So you need to have replication. So that means they have to have the space to show that, you know, this happened in all the pens, or this pen went crazy, but the other two were normal, you know. that sort of thing. So there you have it. I'll let you go to commercial, and then I'll talk about the other two studies. How about that?
Oh, that sounds perfect, and we thank you for coming on today, folks. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D., and we're talking all about some studies. And so our homeschoolers that are out there are even, like she just said, if you have those backyard chickens, so you're like, I've always wanted to know this, I wish it was a study about this, then I'm sure she would be more than happy to help you or lead you in the right direction to try to do a true approved study. So very interesting information, and we'll continue with this topic right after we return from this short commercial break. Thanks for staying with us.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
This looks like a job for...
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Special Thursday Edition with Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D., poultry scientist, and she's going over some studies and really some very interesting studies and hopefully sparking some interest with our younger homeschool listeners about maybe doing some science projects for homeschool or even if they're in public school doing something like that. So, Doctor, welcome back to the show.
Hello.
Hey. All right, very good. We're looking forward to the next two.
Okay. Hold on, I'm closing out a couple screens. And if you see any questions that pop up, Andy, I'm turned away from my computer screen. I'm probably not going to spot them. So if you see them,
that's
let
fine.
Me know.
Somebody asked, I think you said in one of the studies, a 3% difference, and they asked, is 3% statistically significant?
And that, yeah, they wouldn't mention if it wasn't mm-hmm. notable. So, you know, it's not a huge difference, but it's enough to go, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So the next study is the effect of Portulaca oleracea extracts on growth performance and microbial populations in ceca of broilers. And I know your listeners out there are going, what the heck
yeah,
is
I was about
he talking
to say, okay,
about?
And that means?
Wow. Okay, Portulaca, that's purslane. So if your listeners out there are familiar with purslane, it's a little vegetable or herb that grows, and I think it's tasty in salads. Some people call it a weed, but there are some people who actually grow it and sell it. And I think when it goes to flower, it's got a pretty little flower to it. It's a medicinal herb, and this study is out of China, and they have been doing increasing number of studies on medicinal herbs as it affects chickens. So this is looking at broiler chickens, looking at growth performance when they're fed diets that contain purslane and diets that are regular, and how also how it affects the microbial population in the gut. So we know that purslane has an effect on laying hens. Purslane, when you feed it dried and add it to the laying hen diet, it increases egg production, increases egg weight, and there's no drop in cholesterol concentration. But eggs are enriched with N3 fatty acids or omega-3 fatty acids. And it also decreases the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids in the yolk. So we know there's benefits to feeding chickens purslane dried in the diets. But then the question by these researchers was asked, okay, what about broilers? So they did this study. What they did is they took an extract of purslane and they used it in the diet. They had three groups of chickens they looked at. The control, which was a regular corn soy diet, okay, no purslane added. Then they had a 0.2% purslane diet and a 0.4% purslane diet added. They added the extract to the diet. And they grew the birds out for 42 days. And you're going to ask me, and I don't think I wrote it down, what kind of chickens they are. Let's see, where did it go? Arbor Acres chickens. That's what they used in this study. So different from the other study. So they grew them for 42 days. They looked at body weight and feed consumption every 2 weeks. So they did it 14 days, at 28 days, and at 42 days old. On day 28 and 42, they randomly chose 12 broilers and euthanized them and looked at the gut contents. And they did the bacterial analysis on those 2 days, so okay. When the birds were older. So what were the results? Mm-hmm. For body weight, they found an increase on day 28 for both purslane groups over the control birds, but the two purslane groups weren't significantly different from one another, but they both were significantly different from just the control. Body weight was still greater for purslane on day 42 over the control, but the 0.2% purslane extract group was the highest in the body weight. Interesting, huh? You would think that maybe the 0.4% would be higher because that's a higher amount of extract, but they didn't find that result.
I guess it's like, you know, there's probably a certain amount of, say, vitamin C that is effective, and everything else more than that, you just pee out and it's not worth it. It's just, they say a lot of vitamins. Too much is not always better. Your body can't use it. You just, you know, pee it out and it's waste. So why pay?
And, you know, why pay for 0.4% if 0.2% will do the trick? You know?
That makes sense to me perfectly.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. I was actually going to go through that later on, but we got that out of the way now. Let's look at feed conversion ratio. Feed conversion ratio was lower for the purslane groups versus the control. So what does that mean, Andy? Feed conversion ratio was lower.
They ate less food but still maintained the same, or actually more weight.
It took less food for them to put weight on. So they ate less and put weight on better. So the closer to one pound of food makes 1 pound of meat, that's really good feed conversion ratio. And chickens do have pretty good feed conversion ratios.
Which will raise the profit.
Mm-hmm.
Less food.
It takes less food to make more meat.
Mm-hmm.
For the bacteria, they looked at three bacteria. E. coli, which we know is a bad bacteria, bad E. coli, bad E. coli. And they also looked at lactobacillus and bifidobacterium, which are good bacteria. So E. coli on day 28 and day 42 levels were lower at the 0.2% purslane diet compared to the control diet. But the lactobacillus and bifidobacterium, the good bacteria levels, were higher in the 0.2% purslane group.
Okay.
The other thing they looked at, which I forgot to mention earlier, was influence of pH. You know, did the extract influence the pH levels in the gut? And when you change the pH levels in the gut, you can influence the growth or depress the growth of different bacteria. Certain bacteria like certain pHs, and if you change the pH, some of them go, yay, and some of them go, boo. And, you know, they're not really talking to each other in there, but you can pretend they are. So there could be beneficial effects to the bacteria in the bird's cica. And just like we mentioned, more may not be better. That's with the 2%, or the 0.2% versus the 0.4%. So with the 0.2%, you saw, well, with the purslane diets, you saw an increase in body weight, which is good, a decrease in feed conversion ratio, which is good, an increase in the population of good bacteria, and a decrease in the population of bad bacteria. And so they're going to have to do further studies to see how it affects other sections of the gut, and perhaps different strains of broilers, to see if this is a consistent story across, you know, different lines of birds and in different conditions. But that's really interesting. I found it really interesting. Doesn't mean that y'all should go out there and shove, you know, purslane down your chickens' throats. But, you know, if you have it out there, don't stop them from eating it. They do tend to like it, so... Yay.
And I guess they'd have to figure out, okay, the cost of this additive is this much, and the chickens did gain some weight, but it didn't cover the cost of adding this to the feed to begin with, so it actually cost us more to add this.
And, you know, the antimicrobial properties of purslane have been known for a while, and, you know, with more and more drugs going off the market, if you get into a bind and, you know, something's plaguing you flock after flock after flock, you may want to switch to one of these diets and see if your performance doesn't improve somewhat. It gives people options. That's what it does, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready for another
ready.
Study? Okay. Try not to go over time on you or something like that.
Go about another 15 minutes.
Okay. Well, this one's a little different. And I tried to choose a range of topics. So we did one with laying hens, we did one with broilers, we did one with geese, and now this one has to do with consumer preference. Kind of switching things up on you guys. This is one out of Italy. It's called Consumer Preference for Chicken Breast May Be More Affected by Information on Organic Production Than by Product Sensory Properties. So how it actually tastes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sensory property. What they did is they split people. Well, they raised up the chickens. They used three groups. They used commercial chickens as one group, and they were fast-growing broiler chickens. Then they had organic slow-growing chickens and organic fast-growing chickens. So that I found that very interesting that they would choose to split out organic into two different groups. And what they did is they raised them up and processed them, and they used the grilled chicken breast portion. What they did is they had a trained panel, and that panel came up with the descriptive analysis. And they came up with the descriptors for the sensory attributes and they were trained. So they came up with tenderness as a variable, initial juiciness, final juiciness, fibrousness, and residue. So what's left over in your mouth after you swallow? You know, was it a small amount? Was it a high amount? And so those were the factors that they looked at. And then they did something else that I found really interesting. They, you know, they trained a panel and they assessed what the trained panel knew. And then they took these samples out to the general public in three locations in Italy: southern Italy, northern Italy, and central Italy. And they split those people into three groups. One group tasted the chicken and they received no information about where it came from, none whatsoever. So they were completely blind. So that was called the perceived liking group, or the blind group. Then they had another group of people that received information only without tasting. So that was called the expected liking group. And it kind of makes you think, okay, why would they do this? And this expected liking has been shown to influence the quality perception in many types of food, like beer, bread, cheese. You know, whether you're told it's organic or not, it can influence your expected liking. And then the third group was tasting the chicken breast with the info, and that was called the actual liking. So the first group was perceived liking, or the blind group. They tasted and didn't know anything about the birds. Then they had the information group, the expected liking, where they had information and no tasting. And then they had the last group, which was tasting and information combined. So here's some of the results. For the trained panel, what they found was that the control chickens, which were the commercial chickens, were more tender than the fast-growing organic birds and the slow-growing organic birds. It was also more fibrous, and it left more residue than the organic group, fast and slow. Organic slow-growing birds were lower in juiciness before swallowing than the organic fast-growing group and the commercial chicken group. The organic slow-growing group was also lower in fibrousness than the organic fast-growing group. So looking at just the people now who were in the first group, the blind taste testing, they didn't know anything about the bird. So that was tasting without any information. There was no significant difference between the three meat types on their liking of the meat. So there's no preference formulated for the meat. And that tells us that there's good sensory characteristics for all three meats. But isn't that information different from the trained panel that I just talked about? And that's just, you know, that's happens because the 150 people that they tested were untrained. So those people were untrained panelists. They, you know, were just going off their own taste characteristics. And so they were not taught to look for certain characteristics. Now the group that had information without tasting, there were higher scores for liking for organic products over the conventional commercial chicken. And are we really surprised about that? If, you know, that's why we advertise about things. You know, we get people excited about things. So, you know, that means that these people were aware of potential positive effects on product quality for organic products. And interestingly enough, they didn't differentiate between the two different organic products, fast or slow. There was no significant difference between the two organic products. They compared the scores of the people who had tasting without information on the product with those who had information on the product but did not taste. And the information without taste gave higher liking scores for the organic, fast-growing and organic, slow-growing. So they hadn't tasted it, and they already scored it higher in their liking. So that resulted in something called negative disconfirmation, and that's an influence of positive information on farming practices, on meat actual liking. So the opposite occurred for commercial chicken in that category. So let's talk about the people who actually did the tasting with the information. What do you think happened, Andy?
Oh, my goodness. The people who had all the information.
And they tasted.
I bet they still preferred the organic.
The liking scores were significantly higher than the blind tasting group for organic meat. So the actual liking of the product moved in the direction of the expectation.
Uh-huh.
Right? So when you break it down, what does it tell you? It just means talking about your product provides farmers with another tool to kind of separate themselves from all their competitors in this really competitive market. But when people don't know what they're eating, they didn't have any sort of preference. You could give them, you know, I'm not saying mystery meat, but if you tell them nothing about what they're eating, they're not going to have... they're not going to be able to differentiate or have a preference for one meat over the other, which I found really interesting.
Yeah,
and I thought maybe your listeners would find this particular study interesting, too.
Yeah, and it still wouldn't change the fact, just like with, like I said, if there was a study that showed that nutritionally there would be no difference between the organic egg and non-organic egg, that still may not change anybody's mind or what they're paying. They'll continue to do the organic feed. Because what the study doesn't show, or that study you just talked about, was, of course, about taste.
Sensory attributes, yes.
It didn't say anything regarding is the organic healthier for you based on carcinogens and found in the meat or chemicals found in the meat used by not raising it organically and things like that. So, but I can 100% can see that happening where, okay, you have who they know. This is,
you know, you've got to narrow it down to some very specific testing factors. And I think that work's probably been done, but
mm-hmm.
that would require a literature review for me to find information on that. But I wanted to bring this topic to your listeners so that, you know, maybe if some of your homeschoolers out there wanted to do a triangle test with their eggs and grocery store eggs, like maybe hard-cook the eggs and cut them into quarters and give people two of their eggs and one of the grocery store eggs or two of the grocery store eggs and one of their eggs and see if people can... correctly identify which two are the same and which one is the odd man out.
That's
and,
cool.
You know, if they can't tell the difference, you know, they're going to go, all right, well, people can't tell the difference. But if they correctly identify consistently which ones are different based upon taste, then, you know, then that's a significant result. That might be something that they could do for a science fair project. I know, here we are going into summer. Science fair season is over, but you've got time to plan.
Lots of homeschoolers, they still go through the summer, so that would be a fun experiment, absolutely. It's kind of like when we did that thing for Fox in Atlanta, I don't know, 6 months ago, about the egg labeling and how, you know, they can put on there, raised without hormones, to try to entice that sale, but if they do put on raised without hormones on that, both with poultry and poultry and hogs, they have to have a little asterisk somewhere on the package that says something like federal law prohibits the use of hormones in the raising of poultry and hogs. So it's like they're bragging that they're...
that print.
They're bragging that they're, you know, abiding by the law. It's like, hey, I'm driving 55, everybody.
You know? You're like, yeah, you're supposed to be. Duh.
Exactly. So that cracks up a lot of people and surprises folks because, you know, they look at that and they think,
oh, I had a lady
so,
the other day who was just adamant, argued with me, called me a liar, basically, that I must be telling her a lie. And I'm sitting there going, lady, you know,
because you were talking about that
because
hormone?
She was convinced that there has to be hormones. What she does is she goes around to the chicken houses here and picks up the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, of course, they're only meant to grow out to, like, you know, 42, 50-something days. And then, of course, they end up passing away because she's feeding them like gangbusters, and they're going to eat like gangbusters, and they're going to eat themselves to death because they're broiler chickens, okay? So you'd have to do skip-a-day feeding, and I don't think – I really didn't want to go down that path with her. But she was just sure hormones had to be in the diet. And I'm sitting there going, "What? You know, I don't know how many different ways I can tell you this.
Yeah.
What do you
I
want
mean,
me to say? That everything that came out of my mouth for the last 10 minutes was a lie? Go ahead and believe whatever you want." And I was like, no, I'll take you to a feed mill, and you can try to find the bag of hormones.
I mean, it's like I said, I guess you could go down the route to explain to her about, you know, there are other things that can help this chicken put on weight other than just the years
genetic.
Of scientific breeding and to
yeah.
develop this Franken chicken that people call it. Then, I mean, like the rocks are so.
Poor chickens out there going, man, I got a bad name, and all I did was hatch. Thanks.
Franken chicken.
That's kind of mean.
All I did was hatch.
I mean,
give me a break.
I don't give broilers a whole lot of credit, although, you know, they can be, they're really mellow. But to label them, that's kind of mean. that's unfair.
Franken chicken. Okay, not fair. They are cute birds, but you never
know
ours.
They are fast-growing commercial birds.
There you go.
Bred to meet market demands.
There you go. And can still be raised organically.
Yeah,
and,
they
can. And humanely, absolutely.
There's lots of different ways to do it.
Absolutely.
So I see a question in the chat room. Where did Dr. McCrae say you could get grants for this research? Well, of course, we're all waiting for the Farm Bill to pass. Please let the Farm Bill pass. We're losing lots of employees here in our department just because the Farm Bill isn't being passed in a timely manner, which really affects our ability to deliver educational material. But if it does pass, you might check with your SARE office in wherever you live, whether it's Western SARE, North Central SARE, Southern SARE, or Northeastern SARE. And they have something called Farmer Grants, and they have a really good booklet on how to write Farmer Grants. There's only 7 questions, but there are 7 heavy-hitting questions that are no-nonsense. So, you know, you can take a look at those guidelines, and, you know, they're not going to pay for capital investments. Let's just get that out of the way right now. If you want a new barn, forget it. They're not going to pay for that. They want people who know what they're doing, who have raised chickens before. So if you've never raised chickens before, this isn't for you. And, you know, you have to have a scientist on your, or a technical advisor who is a good science background who can advise you on doing the study as it takes place over the course of 1 year's time. So there you go. Every region has its own deadline, so you have to find out what your region's deadlines are. There you have it. You would be in Southern SARE, Andy. I'm in Northeast SARE.
Okay. Have you heard any negative things about this, about the Farm Bill at all? I mean, you mentioned how it not passing is affecting education there at your school.
Well, cooperative extension.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some of the grants that allow us to reach out to minority and low-income farmers are tied to the Farm Bill. And a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. Five and 80% of another are tied to one of those grants. So we're going to lose like 6 people in our programming. So the number of workshops we're going to be able to provide is, you know, the number of people we're going to be able to impact with information is going to drop significantly in the next year.
Are they really worried about it, or is the talk of the campus like, well, yeah,
no,
this could happen, but it's just like anything else, they threatened and they always at the last second.
No, the funding is gone as of August. It's gone. These people know their end date because we weren't able to apply for funds in a grant again this year because the farm bill hasn't, you know, come out yet. So I don't know how we're going to serve people as well as we have in the past with the additional manpower. You know, cooperative extension is always stretched thin. But, you know, we apply for
it. Well, I know one thing that we can do. We'll just have you come on once a week, and then we can reach twice as many people. Just kidding. But, no, we'll just have to, I'll have to follow that a little bit more closely regarding the Farm Bill and see. They've got until August, so I guess you said until...
And, like, they haven't come out with any requests for proposals through SARE because SARE is tied in. You know, SARE does great work, especially for smaller farms and niche markets and, you know, niche market livestock. So, gosh, I hope they pass the Farm Bill soon.
Somebody, I think Poet's Wife said in the chat room, because your elected representatives can't pass a budget. And I was going to type in there, well, not my elected officials, because just about everybody I voted for didn't get in, so they're not my elected officials. They're maybe your elected officials, but not mine, because none of mine are there. So, they can't pass a budget. So. Well, this is cool information. Thank you very much for sharing. I'm glad you came on because it was very entertaining. I think we were going to do for our listeners that were tuning in to hear about northern fowl mite and lice, we will probably try to make that up sometime next week. Now, let me tell you, Peter will not be on this coming Monday. He is traveling this weekend. It is a family affair for him, and I think he's got a relative that's turning, I want to say something like 90 or 95 or 100 years old or something like that. So he's made that family decision that, hey, this is something that definitely is worth celebrating, anybody that can make it, you know, that long. And so I think that's what's happening this weekend. He's got some traveling to do to celebrate a onerous birthday with, is that a word? And and so, well, it is today. And so he will not be joining us Monday, so but I think he gave me some other days he's available next week, so if you were tuning in to hear about that. But this was very awesome, and it worked out great because you can't come on your assigned day next week.
Yeah.
So it worked out perfectly. We still got our fix of Dr. McCray this week and today, so that's perfect. So thank you very much for coming on. Great information, especially for all our homeschoolers and others that may be interested, like Christmas Chick, that I think has the farm to be able to do some studies down there. So, gotta love that. And so, we appreciate you as always for coming on, and we look forward to having you on. Let's see, if not the 6th, you wouldn't be on the 6th, so that would move us to the 20th. Actually, Jen's birthday, June 20th, is your next day, I believe, out, or you'll be joining us. So, we're looking forward to that. Now, we'll look at the topic and be promoting that
great,
as that date approaches. So thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you have a summer's here. Are there students there that teaching
no,
summer classes?
No, well,
no.
Some students take summer classes, but you know, the majority of the students have gone home or gone getting a job or an internship somewhere.
Okay, and I'll talk to you after air sometime about your pursuit of getting tenure. So that's, I think you were trying to do that.
The pursuit
so,
this year, yes.
That's something, that's a goal for this year?
Yes, definitely.
Very awesome. Well, we hope that you will meet that goal. You definitely deserve it, that's for sure. We know how hard you work. So thank you very much, Dr. Bridget McCray, for coming on, and we'll see you
thank you, Andy.
In June.
All right. Bye-bye, listeners.
Great. Thank you so much. Alrighty, what a great episode. It's always great when we have Dr. McCray that comes on and shares her vast knowledge, being a PhD, and all this interesting stuff, everything from washing a chicken, which I believe was one of her hottest episodes. We had close to 10,000 listeners just for that one episode. So that was a hot episode, how to wash a chicken. And so when we have Dr. McCray come on, we have the chicken Dr. Peter Brown come on, when we have the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy come on and breeders come on and share their expertise, is absolutely awesome. And studies, and I love when Dr. McCray comes on and talks about studies, because talking with her and other PhDs in the poultry industry, I quickly learned that a lot of times it's there's no gray, it's black or white, it's been proven or it hasn't. So when she comes on and talks about the studies, I think it's an eye-opener to say, to learn and say how this is how scientific it has to be to end up having any credence, because, like I said, fed the exact same kind of condition, same area, same fencing, same this, same that, in order to get this one outcome that may or may not help, say, the industry make a little bit more money or keep a little bit more birds alive, which will result in more money, or even for our backyard folks. So studies are always very interesting to me to listen to those, what all goes into a study, and especially the results, because sometimes it backs up what we've been teaching forever, just backyard poultry from our experiences, and sometimes it debunks that. And then sometimes, sometimes it makes you want to say, well, I think I'll do a study that I think I'm going to feed my chickens a Twinkie every day and then see if they have worms or not. And then if they don't have worms, then by golly, feeding them a Twinkie every day is going to prevent worms. And you know how I get sarcastic about that sometimes when we read things on blogs and forums about, hey, this causes this, or this helps prevent this, and there's been no study about it. It's just, hey, Twinkies prevent cancer because I eat one every day, and so far I don't have cancer. So Twinkies must prevent cancer. So, but studies are cool, and I love it when she's on and she talks about them, because it's an eye-opener about all the detailed information and the information that it shows. And even then, like today's show, we said, well, now access to outdoors, they just had access. So 90% of those birds may not have gone outside. So you still, even though it's a study, you can research it, read it very carefully, and then get your own outcome from it as well. But gotta love it when Dr. McCray's on. Very awesome topics. So that's going to wrap up another show, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So glad that you could tune in with us. We will be on the road tomorrow. We'll be finally heading back to the old homestead. And I know I've got a lot to do in the garden. I know I'm going to have to till. I know I'm going to have to harrow. I know I'm going to have tons of weeds. But I got to get it taken care of, because we always love our spring and summer garden. Are you working on your garden? Hope you are. And so I've got my work cut out for me before we hit the road again next Tuesday. So, yep, life story on the road. Sometimes I've been doing research lately about becoming a full-time RVer. There's people that do that. They sell their house, all their belongings, and just become full-time RVers. And as much as we've been on the road, it's sounding more and more tempting. Just saying, we can do this. I was even looking online at things called work camping, W-O-R-K-A-M-P-I-N-G, work, not with a C camping, but work with a K, work camping, about how you can hit the road full-time, still do the radio show, of course, still do the Chicken Whisperer tours, and try to make a living that way. But then when you get to a spot and you're going to stay there for a while, you get these campgrounds need some labor. You can help, and they'll swap. They'll completely pay for your spot and your hookups and everything. If you do a little work around the place for them. So just doing a little research like that. Maybe we could just make this a full-time spread the chicken love type of thing all over the country. And we're already trying to do that much we can. But like I said, the last week of June, we're going to be seeing some great fans in South Carolina and North Carolina. We're going to be hitting Anderson, South Carolina, Easley, South Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, Weaverville, North Carolina, and Newton, North Carolina. So we're definitely looking forward to that. 5 shows in 5 days, book signings, workshops. It's going to be an awesome fun. And I'm sorry, Zasmira, not in my part of North Carolina. I know that kind of stinks, and I apologize that. But maybe we'll get in that area. And maybe, just maybe, there's a big chicken stock going on, I think, the 29th, Saturday the 29th of June, and I think it's Statesville, North Carolina. So they say it's going to be Saturday and Sunday. People will camp out and stay over to Sunday. I suspect majority of people won't. And so I'm going to try to make that chicken stock there. I think it's Talking Chicken Scratch. You find her on Facebook. She's got a big chicken stock that Saturday. If I can make it Saturday, I'll have to do some backtracking because it's further than our last stop on Sunday in Newton. I don't know how far more or far east it is from Newton. It may be that where I can head over there and set up the camper and the RV at her spot on late Saturday afternoon or mid-Saturday afternoon after my Saturday event in Asheville, get on over there, and then spend Saturday night and Sunday, wake up and drive back over to Newton with the supplies I need to actually do the mid-afternoon Sunday 2 to 4 p.m. event, and then drive back over to Statesville and camp out there at her chicken stock. So we'll see. All that's, again, in the plannings. I want to meet as many people and see as many people as I can when we're on the road because we love it, but I'll keep you abreast of all how that's going to work. So we appreciate it, and we will talk to you again. We'll be back next week with another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, learning from the experts in their field when we have them on. So have a great weekend, everybody. Love you all. Thanks for tuning in. And visit us on Facebook.
Ha ha ha.